Well, pop yourself a beer or a cold libation. Let me tell you about the sax little thing. I heard the latest show from Brother Jason, and he's gonna put a coda on the thing. I asked if it was dead like Walsh or Gossett, and I'm sending Gary G. a word. He said, "Don't give up hope, but I'm just a little tired, and I know that I can take him at his word. And if there's a silver lining to my father's player's handbook, I'd have to think it goes something like this. When it comes to gaming episode and turning out new episodes, playing at the table that we'll miss. The Nerds Variety Podcast. Nerds RPG Podcast. The Nerds Variety Podcast. The Nerds RPG."
Welcome back to Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. Today I'm going to open up the mailbag and play some calls and answer some calls. And then I am going to go into a little bit of an explanation on why I've decided to wind the show down. I will warn you that we have work being done at the house, so there is background noise in the segments where I'm talking. And during the explanation at the end of the show, there is excessive dog barking, so be warned. Okay, let's dive into that mailbag.
Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Well, maybe it's your auntie or a joke by your spouse, but the operator's screaming is coming from inside the house.
Yo, Jason, just listening to your latest episode, and that new song from TJ is awesome. You know, it's kind of a bummer that you're not going to play that song very much since you're closing up shops, but yeah, we'll talk about that some other time. I promise you'll hear from me again before the end of the show. But what I wanted to call about, other than the amazing song, new theme song, is I just had to laugh when you started talking about the Marvel Comics ROM The Space Knight, because on my Facebook feed, a bunch of comic things show up in my feed just when I'm scrolling through. And over the past couple days, and they're just pictures of comic book covers, like classic old school comic book covers. And over the past couple days, one that has popped up more than once is ROM the Space Knight. And I was thinking to myself, who the hell knows who ROM the Space Knight is? Who ever read ROM the Space Knight? I've never even heard of ROM the Space Knight. So, of course, unsurprisingly, it is you, my media savvy friend. So that was awesome. I got to get back to listen to you talk about ROM the Space Knight, because I want to learn about ROM the Space Knight, because some of the covers look amazing. But yeah, totally, never even heard of him before, and now you're talking about him right now. It is, we're all in a simulation, right? I don't think so. Anyway, peace out.
Joe, thank you for that call. Of course, Joe has the Hindsightless podcast for hopefully a little while longer. Well, we'll see if he is able to continue on here at the end times, the Anchorpocalypse. But yeah, that new song that we played at the beginning of this show that TJ did is, I think, very fitting and very well done. TJ has been great over the years. You know, recently I got to play in a Star Wars game that TJ ran, West End Games D6 Star Wars, first edition, although TJ added in the Wild Die, which isn't part of first edition. That actually came in second edition. And Jason Hobbs was in it, and Edward was in it, and, Stu is in there too, I think. Anyway, there were a couple players in there, and we had a lot of fun. I guess I should edit this so I have the right people that I credit as playing in the game, huh? Nah. This is Guerrilla Podcasting, we don't do that kind of thing. Anyhow, TJ did a great job running this game that you know, some of us had played, some of us knew quite a bit about, some people didn't know about it, but overall it worked really well. It was a really fun session. TJ kind of undermined the whole idea a little bit of West End Game Star Wars, but that's okay. We had a lot of fun, and he did a great job running. I always loved playing in TJ's games, and I was very fortunate to be able to get in that. Folks, if you ever get a chance to be, if you're into the Discords, or you go to like North Texas RPG, and there's a guy there, TJ, and you have a chance to play in his games, you might see him around with like Jason Hobbs and that crew, then get in those games. They are wonderful. What else? ROM. Yeah, man, ROM was the first comic I collected. I've still got all those comics. You know, they're coming out with these omnibuses, these big, heavy volumes, have 25 issues in each. And, you know, at that point, should I sell my original ones? Nah, I'll just keep them. But I don't know how much I really went into the depth into ROM and all the details. There's a whole lot more there, you know, where he falls in love with the Earth Woman and she gets put in a set of Space Knight armor and loses her humanity to some degree, and a large degree, as she becomes, you know, pretty bloodthirsty. And there's a whole lot in there. The ROM series is really good. You know, Manilow did such a great job writing those. Yeah, highly, highly recommended. If you have questions about it, reach out to me, and I will try to answer them. I guess that'll be not on the podcast anymore, but I'll definitely be happy to answer it, any questions offline on ROM. But, yeah, thank you for that call. I really appreciate it. Let's move on to our next caller.
Hey, Jason. Spencer here. Just calling in to say how much I enjoyed your conversation with James Sahl. Really, really interesting stuff. In fact, I've listened to it a couple of times now because there's so much great information there. I have been planning to do my own episode on Solo. It's something I've spoken about a few times in the past, but I have struggled with it myself, you know, to get things going, get things off the ground, find the time to do it. And I'm also struggling to find time to do that particular episode too. So, well, I'm hoping to get that out at some point this month, actually. And it's been great reading your new blog all about your Solo exploits. And I look forward to seeing how that develops. So, yeah, great stuff. Take care.
Spencer, thank you so much for that call. Spencer is also known as Free Thrall and does the Keep Off the Borderland podcast. Spencer graciously took over the Movie Mondays that I was hosting last year. When, you know, I first started realizing I might have to wind down the show, we found a home for Movie Mondays. That was one of the first things I did in the process. And, you know, Spencer graciously took that over. He's been doing a great job. This month's movie is The Dark Crystal. You still have till the 26th, I believe, to call in. So, or send an email with your thoughts on The Dark Crystal. So go check out Free Thrall's podcast, Keep Off the Borderlands, and get that feedback in. Great, great thing that Goblin's Henchman came up with there. Anyhow, James Sahl is great. I was very fortunate to have him on the show. I think that was the second time I've had him on the show over the years. But he is very responsive. So if you are curious about solo gaming, if you have questions, go listen to his podcast, Subclass Act. He's got his email and his contact information in that show on his episodes. And he's very responsive, and will talk with you about solo gaming and give you some advice. So check that out. Wonderful, wonderful actual play podcast. What I like about James's podcast is he turns on the microphone and he starts going. And he does put music there now, but he talks through the game mechanics as he goes. So he doesn't play the game and then later on dramatizes it into a story. You hear him wrestle with the mechanics and roll the dice and do all that, which to me is what I want to hear. Some people want to hear it made into a story, and that's very cool. There's nothing wrong with that. There are great podcasts that do that. But James provides a much more real, like you're sitting at the table with him while he's doing it, experience. And I appreciate that. So thank you for that call. And folks, check out Subclass Act and Keep Off the Borderlands. Okay, let's go to our next caller.
Hey, Jason, the other trend that 48 Hours started was the action comedy cop movie coming out at Christmas. 48 Hours is a Christmas movie. Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Lethal Weapon is a Christmas movie. There's another recurring theme that it started the trend for. Something just to bring it back to the topic of fantasy. I've always said whether it was an actual influence or a coincidence, you can't so much say a cop movie, but the sort of humorous action adventure buddy genre. Fritz Leiber with The Fafford and the Gray Mouser tapped into that long before I think it got into film and television as a standard trope. So, always got to give a shout out to our Appendix N influences there. But anyway, it's a great episode. I'm enjoying hearing you and Joe talk about these movies. I need to go back and watch them. I haven't watched them in a long time. So I also appreciate Joe's insight on how, whether directly or indirectly, there is some sort of commentary on law enforcement in America there. So anyway, great episode all around. Really enjoyed it. Talk to you guys later.
BJ, thank you for that call. BJ, of course, has the Arcane Alienist podcast. And yeah, when I say buddy cop, I'm using it very generically, kind of like Coke, right? But what I really mean, like Coke in the place of soda, but what I really mean when I say buddy cop is Odd Couple. And I'm thinking about these pairings of mismatched partners. And they don't have to be police officers, and they don't have to be men, right? It could be feds with Rebecca De Mornay and Mary Gross, although in that case, of course, they are law enforcement officers. But it could be something like See No Evil, Hear No Evil with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor, So any movie with a mismatched pair of protagonists falls in that buddy cop thing for me. And like you say, it could come from literature as well. And I think Farford and the Gray Mouser definitely fall into that kind of Odd Couple pairing and fall into that trope. And yeah, the idea of this Odd Couple pairing 100% predates movies, I believe. We can go way back in literature and find this kind of thing. So yeah, I think that's an interesting observation. It'd be interesting to go back and try to find, obviously we're not going to find the first, use of this because it goes back to mythology. And mythology and legends all over the world have this kind of thing, Odd Couple kind of pairing built into them. So I don't know if it'd be possible to find the origin of this, but I think we could find some really old examples of it. As far as a Christmas movie, yeah, that's true. There's no question about it that 48 Hours is just as much a Christmas movie as Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Folks, there's no reason to call in because we unfortunately are out of time with the podcast to discuss Christmas movies more. But if you don't think that 48 Hours is a Christmas movie, or you feel there are certain kind of specific things that should fall under the Christmas movie genre, then I highly recommend you call the Arcane Alienist podcast, which is BJ's podcast, and we can pick up Christmas movies over there. I think that would be kind of interesting to do. It goes back even further than 48 Hours, I think. I don't think 48 Hours at all was the origin of your action Christmas movie. One of the great comedies of our time, Trading Places, is also a Christmas movie, right? And very much so, it's a Christmas movie with drunk Dan Aykroyd in the Santa costume, yeah? I don't know. It's interesting how people have different definitions of Christmas movies. I did a show a few years ago with Taylor from, at that time, Clerics Wear Ringmail. Now it's a Whispering GM podcast, and where we talked about our favorite Christmas movies and the definition of Christmas movie and all that. But yeah, I would agree with you. If Die Hard is a Christmas movie, then 48 Hours also definitely falls under that title. But thank you for that call. I really appreciate it. And our next caller is also going to comment on 48 Hours. So let's turn it back over to Joe.
Yo, Jason, so I just got finished listening to you and Joe's episode about 48 hours and another 48 hours, and holy shit, man, that was amazing. The two of you guys did such a fantastic job of talking about what really could be a pretty difficult movie. It was amazing. You guys had, you both of you had me cracking up at a couple different times. Jason, when you guys were talking in earlier on in the episode, when you were talking about just the overt, just crazy amounts of racism in the movie and misogyny in the movie. And at one point you say something like, yeah, and we're not saying you should go around calling people these names or anything like that. It was, you were so far away from saying anything like that, that the fact that you said you weren't saying that just cracked me the hell up, dude. Seriously, I laughed like I was in my room listening and just started laughing very hard. And then later on, when you when you mention that it's a Christmas movie and Joe just drops the line, holidays were different back then. Oh my God, I lost it again at that. It was amazing, man. So thank you both for putting out an awesome episode.
Joe, thank you for that call. I appreciate it. Normally I don't break into middle messages, but I'm going to break in the middle of this one because the second part of his message has to do with the game Visceral, and I'll talk about that separately. But I wanted to reach out here and thank Joe for the kind words. I wonder if we didn't talk about the treatment of women in 48 hours and the race relations of 48 hours too much. I thought it was important to bring that up just because some of those things can be shocking for more modern audiences. If you were alive in 1982 or, you know, in the 70s, then I don't think any of the language in that movie or the way people treat each other would be a shock. And I don't think it was that shocking. It never impressed me that it was super shocking back when I watched it as a kid, right? But I think it's important to point those things out for modern viewers. Anyway, thank you for that. I had a lot of fun discussing that with Joe. And I think, Joe Salvador, that is. And I think we still talked highly of a lot of things in the movie. I still recommend 48 Hours. I mean, I still think it's a great movie. I got another call from MW, the World's MW Lewis Podcast. Great podcast. Talks primarily about AD&D First Edition, which is totally cool because AD&D First Edition is a great game. And the problem is MW's call gets further in the discussion with race relations and the depiction of women on the film. And he brought up a couple points that might be a little bit controversial. He brought up some very good points as well. But the problem is this show's sunsetting. There's not going to be another episode where people can respond to NW's. If I played his call, people wouldn't be able to respond to his call here. So I'm not going to play his call because I don't want to open a conversation that we can't close. And I don't want to start a conversation there that we can't end. So that's why I'm not playing his call, because I don't want to get people fired up with no way to voice those opinions. I hope MW does talk about this over on his show. And I have reached out to him, referenced this decision not to play his message. But I did want to give him a public apology for not playing his message. Because, you know, typically I play all the messages. But I just, because of the fact there won't be a chance for people to go back and forth, I didn't want to open that conversation here on this particular podcast. So, anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. And now let's go back to Joe, because he's going to ask a question about the game Visceral.
And yeah, as I send you this message, Jason, you were talking about using Visceral for this game, and we have now played Visceral, and it was a really fun system. But it got me thinking, so in the example of play for Visceral, unless I'm misremembering it, the difficulty dice only get ratcheted up one dice at a time in that example of play. So in my mind, because I didn't read the rules for running the game necessarily. I just read the example of play and was like, cool, I read the rules, which probably isn't a great idea. But
when we played, when you were running the game, there was a couple times where you added two difficulty dice at, for one difficulty thing, right? And so I was wondering, like, is that part of the rules? Or is it just my way of thinking that the fact that it doesn't say you do this thing means you don't do this thing? That could just be like remnants of Pathfinder, right? In my mind, like there's not a rule for it. That means you can't do it. It doesn't list this thing as something you can do. That means you probably can't do it. And Pathfinder isn't that rigid, but in general, sort of. So yeah, man, I don't know. That's just what I was thinking. It was a super, super fun game. I really like that system. And yeah, I agree. I think it would be an awesome buddy cop game, or even just like in the example of play, if you just have one player and one GM, it would be a great game for that too. So again, awesome episode. You and Joe did just a fantastic goddamn job. Thank you for it. I will talk to you later. Take it easy. Peace out.
Joe, thank you again for that call. And let me try to answer this. Now, Joe and I have talked offline and we're good. Joe gets where I'm coming from with the rules, and we're on the same sheet of music now, and Joe has helped me out. And I want to talk a little bit about how Joe did help me out with this call and our follow-on discussion. I kind of wish we had recorded the follow-on discussion, but we didn't, so I'm going to recap it for you. But before I do, I just want to say, you know, it's really interesting. Joe talks about being a Pathfinder GM and the idea that if it's not in the rules, you can't do it. Or if the rules don't give you permission to do it, you can't do it. And it's those two different, those competing designs in the role-playing game sphere. The idea of rules as something that tells you what you can do, and if it's not in the rules, you can't do it, like a board game, right? Or rules that give you guidelines, and unless the rules explicitly say you can't do it, you can do it, which, you know, is a more open-ended concept. I kind of prefer the latter, personally, but I understand the advantages of the former, and I know a lot of people like that former, more restrictive rules. I don't think either one's right or wrong. I think they're just different approaches, and I think both can be a heck of a lot of fun to play. I play in Joe's Pathfinder game. We've been playing the Wrath of the Righteous campaign, their adventure path, for over a year, and it's been a lot of fun, and I look forward to playing future games with Joe and systems like that. But, you know, I also play loosey-goosey games where you make it up as you go. So it's, you know, there's room for all this in this one. That's why RPGs are so great, because they're so open and there's so many different ways you can play these games and so many different types of games you can play. But to go back to Visceral, I mean, it's a pamphlet rule set. It's a front and back of a page, and, you know, there's three columns on each page, and four of the six columns are rules, and two columns are rules examples. Okay? So this is hardly a fully comprehensive rule set. Obviously, you're going to have to make it up as you go. You're going to have to interpret things. There's no question about it. And you're going to have to adjust the rules for yourself to insert things that aren't covered in the rules. And that's okay. But the way Visceral works is that some actions, if it's obvious the character's going to do it, I'm going to climb a ladder, you know, then, yeah, you can climb the ladder. I'm going to climb the 100-foot-tall ladder with nobody holding it while I'm being shot at. Well, now maybe we need to roll dice, right? So when you roll dice in Visceral, it's all D6s, and you roll die pool. And that pool's built by the challenges that you're facing. They're called challenge dice. So the more challenging the action is, the more dice you roll. If you roll a 6, that's a failure. If you roll a 1, that means there's a cost to your action. So let's say you're shooting a pistol and you rolled a 1, now maybe you're out of ammunition. That's a cost. Okay. There are ways to overcome failures in the game and all that, and I'm not going to go into the entire rules mechanics because I kind of want you to go out and buy Visceral. There'll be a link in the show notes. And actually, if you go to the itch page for Visceral, the pictures that are up there for the game, you can pretty much see all the rules in the pictures that they have there. So you can kind of see it before you buy it. But I'm not going to read all the rules to you because I don't have permission to do that. But I will describe how you build your pool of dice for this action, for this challenge pool. And basically, each thing that makes the action harder adds one die, right? So if you are going to shoot at somebody, that's one die. If you're trying to shoot them in the head, that's more specific, that's two dice. If they are currently, you know, actively dodging you, then that's going to be three dice, right? If you've never held this handgun before in your life, if you're not trained shooting, well, now that's four dice, right? And so you build up each additional complication adds a die up to a total, a maximum of six dice. If you come up with more than six complications, then it's probably an action that you can't do and you need to come up with something else, a different action for your character, is the idea. When we ran this game for the first time, Joe and another buddy of ours were the players, and I was running the game, and they were in a car chase. And they were in their van, chugging down the road, and they'd be chased by these rednecks and pickups who are shooting at them. And they just happened to have a grenade there in the van with them. And that one of the trucks is kind of pulling up alongside. And so Joe wanted to open up the back hatch, open up the back door, lean out, and toss a grenade in the bed of this pickup truck that was, you know, chasing them. And that's cool. That's kind of thing we want to do in games like this. Totally fine. So he was in the back of the van, or he was in a moving van trying to throw the grenade. I think that was one. Throw it in a moving vehicle. At a moving vehicle was one. Maybe throw it in the bed was three. I think I was at three dice. I wanted to roll four dice. And I just said, well, but it's pretty tough, so just roll four dice. Where I should have come up with another descriptor. You know, obviously you can come up with a lot of descriptors here, right? So you're in a zigzagging van as one. You're trying to throw a grenade at something. Let's start over. So I could have done, you're throwing a grenade, that's one die. You're throwing it from a zigzagging moving vehicle, that's two dice. You're throwing it at another zigzagging vehicle, that's three dice. You're trying to throw it in the bed of that zigzagging vehicle, that's four dice, right? So it's just a matter of coming up with a good description, the GM come up with a good description for each die that they add to that challenge pool. And I think maybe I added two dice instead of one die, just saying, well, this is going to be really hard to do, and I should have been more descriptive. So, and one thing I like in here is that because you're working up this challenge for the players, also, if there's a cost, you decide what the cost is before the die roll as well. And the rules do say the GM player should work together to figure out the number of challenge dice get rolled and what the failure would be and that kind of thing. So, yeah. Anyway, it's a pretty cool game. We're definitely going to play it again. And maybe I'll talk about it on my blog, or you hear Joe talk about it over at Hindsightless. But there is a link to the game in the show notes. Okay, this next set of calls have to do with the One Ring. And I'm going to play these. I'm not really going to answer these calls because I have another episode coming out next week that's going to discuss the One Ring. I'm not going to be alone in that. I brought on help to talk about the game. So I hope you tune in next week for that episode. But I do want to play these calls so you can hear them. And the genesis of this is I had played a game of the One Ring with Che Webster, Roleplay Rescue, and GM Shadow from A Song of Dice and Shadows podcast, and another player. And actually, the other player was the GM. We were all players. But after playing, I was talking with Carl Rodriguez over the Gemologist Presents, and I told him that the gameplay felt restricting to me. I couldn't really explain why, but it just felt maybe a little more convoluted and controlling than it needed to be. And Carl said, well, isn't that, do you mean procedural? You know, in the way like BX is procedural, where it sets out exactly how to do things. And while the One Ring is procedural, that's not really what I meant, but I couldn't really articulate why it felt that way to me. The One Ring is designed to emulate the feeling of the Lord of the Rings, the novels, right? Maybe the movies too, I don't know, but definitely the novels. And it has specific mechanics in there for journeys, for, you know, having councils, you know, combats a certain way. And, you know, it does evoke those books, without doubt, as you play the game. But it just, I don't know. Anyway, hopefully in the episode you hear next week, my guests will help me figure out what I'm feeling about the game. We'll talk about the game and maybe even redeem the game because I'm bringing on folks that know the One Ring much better than I do. Because, you know, if you're going to talk about something, bring an expert on, right? But anyway, these calls are a reaction to when I expressed those thoughts about I wasn't quite sure how to express how I felt about the One Ring. So that's what these calls are, but I'm not going to actually respond to them because the response will be next week's show.
Hey, Jason, I know very little about the One Ring other than what I've heard from it described on various podcasts. But is the question you're asking about too procedural or railroady maybe? I think what it sounds like to me is you've got sort of the procedures in BX are sort of I'm trying to think of a way to it's almost I want to say macroeconomic versus microeconomic, but I don't know if that's a good analogy. But you know the procedures in BX are on micro scale in the sense that we are going to engage in combat. Now there's a procedure to resolve how that takes place. We're going to explore a dungeon or a hex in the wilderness. There's a procedure for how that takes place to make sure we sort of hit all the high points and do what we need to do. But it doesn't tell you whether you're going to go into a dungeon or when you decide to pack up and leave the dungeon. It doesn't tell you which hex you're going to go into if you're going to explore a hex, unless you're just rolling a random procedure to figure out which hex. You know, you get lost or something like that. It doesn't tell you when you go into town what you do once you're into town, but once you start to engage in an NPC, you may get a reaction roll as sort of a procedural way of determining how the NPC reacts. Those are all just once the players make a choice to do something of substance, there's a little procedure to resolve how it plays out whenever the outcome may be in question or uncertain. I get the sense with the One Ring, it's more of a you're basically on a cycle of a type of story, journey, safe haven, council, journey, safe haven, council, that kind of stuff, where it's locking you into a particular type of story as opposed to giving you little rules, procedures for how to resolve conflict or challenges when they come up. Although you're the one deciding where you go and how you find them, if that makes sense. I don't know. Maybe I'm just blowing a lot of hot air here, but that's kind of what I'm wondering if that's what you're grasping at in your latest episode. Anyway, talk to you later.
Hey, Jason. Spencer here. I found it really interesting what you were saying about procedures and how you were quite happy with, say, the procedures of a game like BX. Yeah, when you played the One Ring, you found them a little problematic. I've not played the One Ring, but am I right in assuming that certain, say, narrative elements are incorporated into those procedures? Elements of the story are kind of taken out of your hands and are kind of gamified, if that makes sense. And does that leave you feeling that your kind of freedom as a player character, your player agency is being messed with a little, like it's stepping on your creative toes as a player? Because this got me thinking about a recent post I saw by Ben Milton, a questing beast on YouTube. So some guy in an interview whose name escapes me, he plays 5e. He does an actual play and he was asked why he chose to use 5e when he has kind of a narrative play style. And he said, well, because I want to have input to the narrative and I want things like combat to be managed by the game. And because the game itself is focused on those elements, it allowed him freedom as a GM to do what he liked narratively. I thought this was a very interesting point. Ben referred to the fact that Sean McCoy, the creator of Mothership, explained that stealth was quite an important part of the game. And that's a reason why the game doesn't have any rules around stealth, because he wants people to engage with that in a narrative sense rather than handing it over to a dice roll. Maybe I'm conflating different things there, but it's just something that your comments brought to mind. Take care.
Hi, Jason. It's Barry here. Just ringing in and talking about you. Well, not your most recent episode, because the OG episode's come out, but the one before that, talking about the One Ring. I'm not going to mention about you finishing podcasting, because I hope if I don't mention it and don't think about it, I'll mention it. Anyway, try not to mention it too much in the hope that if I don't say anything, it just won't happen, because you know that's how denial works. Really, that's how the world works, isn't it? If I don't acknowledge it, you've got to carry on doing it. Yeah? Anyway, I will give you a proper message anyway before the end of the month, all joking aside. But what I'd say, because we played in that game together, and yeah, I kind of get what you mean, but I'm struggling to put my finger on the issue as well. I think to be fair though, the issue is not with the game. I think the issue was because it's the first time we played it. It's the first time we got used to trying to transition between, you know, the adventuring phase and the council bit and the fellowship phase and all that kind of stuff. And so it maybe felt a bit artificial. It felt like we were sort of the artificial breaks. We were transitioning and we were kind of stepping out of character into like a gamey session. I guess that's it for me. I think when we went from, not so much the travel, the overland travel, there was a little bit of that, but not so much. But again, I think it's just because we weren't used to doing it. So we weren't kind of clear in our heads as to what was happening and what we were rolling for and stuff. And I think the more you play it, the less of an issue that might be. But I think certainly for the council stage, it's almost like we were stopping and then starting something slightly different, I guess, and we kind of stepped out of character to look through the rules to work out, you know, what you do with this whole, you know, setting the agenda and blah 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 and all the rest of it and stuff. And so I don't think it flowed as smoothly, and so I think it's why we kind of suggested playing again, I guess, because I think the more we get used to doing that and it becomes part of just the game process, it might feel a lot smoother and a bit more connected. I think just because it was our first time and none of us really had a clue what on earth we're doing. I mean, Derek kind of did, but you know what I mean? But generally speaking, it's the first time we kind of tried to do this together, that it maybe made it a little bit clunky, if that makes sense. And I think that's probably the fairest thing I can say about it. But yeah, I did have a good time. I think I enjoy playing in Middle-earth games generally, no matter what system we use. I mean, we all know that MERP obviously is a superior product and is obviously the best one out there. But you know, I'll give other things a go to give them a chance. You know, got to give them a fair go, don't you? Anyway, take care and I'll speak to you soon.
Okay, thank you to those three callers, to BJ of the Arcane Alienist. Great podcast. He's recently been talking about how he's been running D&D for a group of high schoolers. Great stuff. Thank you to Spencer again from Keep Off the Borderland, and to Barry, or GM Shadow, of A Shadow of Dyson. No, A Song of Dice and Shadows podcast. That's it. And Barry was in the game with me, that One Ring game with me. Hopefully all this will make more sense next week on the One Ring show next week, and I hope that answers the questions. But thank you to you three for reaching out and trying to help me describe my thoughts, which are still a little bit muddled, but hopefully we'll get those sorted out. That's it for the calls this week. I am going to have one more segment, though, because, you know, I did announce I'm going to wind the show down at the end of the month, and even though we're going to keep pumping out shows until the end of the month, and everybody's been very gracious and kind about that, but you know, it's not unfair to wonder why am I winding the show down. And I feel that a little bit of an explanation, you know, isn't unfair to ask for. So let's see what I have to say for myself. Hey, everybody. I promised you a talk on why I'm kind of shutting down the podcast. I'm going to apologize for the background noise. I'm in the backyard. Nice day. The dogs are enjoying the weather. The neighbor's cutting the grass. So, you know, typical guerrilla podcasting. I just think it's a good place to end the show. It feels like a good time to wind things down. You know, we're going out with a bang, an interview with author of a great game system, the One-Shot RPG. We're getting out the rest of the movie episodes that we had recorded. I've got a great conversation for you on The One Ring that'll be coming out next week. As we talked about on the call section earlier today. So I'm still, you know, keeping stride until the very end, but it just feels like a good time to wind things down.
things are changing. The sun is setting on the Anchor community, the community that came around the Anchor app that was easy to, that was free, easy to use on your phone, easy to call at each other's shows, easy for listeners to call in. And that's changed now. Spotify took over. They removed the ability to call in through the app. Now they're sunsetting Anchor totally. You're not going to be able to record and publish from your phone. You'll need a laptop as well. You're having to learn new technologies and use new software, use different ways to edit your podcast and do things, which a lot of us are old and we're set in our ways and don't like to do new things. You know, we've tried to recreate the Anchor experience by things like SpeakPipe. You know, I pay for an upgraded SpeakPipe account to have 5-minute messages. Not many people use that feature, but it's there. You know, speaking of paying, I mean, I pay for Zoom for the podcast, and there's a couple different things I pay for the podcast. Podcast cost me money in the end. It cost me a fair bit of money when you look at the giveaways I've done over the years, which is fine. I'm not complaining about that. This podcast was never meant to make money. I view this podcast and the things it revolves around, games and pop culture and movies, those are my hobbies. And you're my friends, as I view it. So I'm sharing my hobbies and talking about my hobbies with my friends. And that's what this podcast is about. And if that costs a little bit of money, that's okay. That's not a problem. It was never meant to make money, and I don't want to make money on my hobbies. I am just the kind of person that I don't want to mix the two. So, yeah, making money was never part of the deal. That's why there's no Patreon or anything like that. And I'm not putting that down, but just for me personally, I don't like to mix commerce and my hobbies. And that makes you my customers if you're paying me, right? If I'm making money off this, you're my customers. And now I have obligations. Not just obligations, but I feel, you know, those extra responsibilities. And I kind of don't want to do that. I just want to talk about stuff with my friends. The limit on the call-in features have made that harder. People can still call in. People still do call in. We had calls earlier this episode. But, you know, the calls have slowed down, and we don't get as many people and a variety of people as we used to. Which is a shame, because my favorite part of the show is interacting with other people, whether it's interacting with the calls or having a guest on. And I've had a lot of fun having guests on over the years. And those are my favorite shows. If I do return to... Now, I'm happy to show up on other people's shows as a guest. I'm going to call into other shows. But if I do show back up in podcasting, it'll be some kind of joint show. It'll be something like Cerebivore that's a panel discussion, or it'll be a show where I have guests. But it won't be me alone as a talking head. I think, you know, with 600 and, I don't know, 40 episodes or something I'll end up with, I've had enough of those episodes. So in the future, my intent is to be on shows with other people or to put out shows with other people if I return to podcasting, which, you know, who knows? Things are changing in my life. We're moving my mom in with us, which is fine. I'm happy to do that, but that's going to take up more time. And podcasting takes time. Editing the shows takes time. And that's time that's taken away from my family. It's time taken away from my dog that you hear barking in the background, right? Or both the dogs, actually. Now, Gadget felt left out. But, yeah, so that time is tough because podcasting and editing you have to do alone in a room somewhere separated from your family. That's one of the reasons I'm trying to my toe in the blogging sphere, because of blogging, I can sit on the couch with my wife while she's watching TV and I can do the blog. So, you know, it doesn't separate me from the family as much. That's kind of the idea there. But as far as the show, I do thank everybody that's hung out for the show. I thank everybody that's stayed with it. I thank everybody that's finding this for the first time and looking back. I don't intend to take episodes down. I tend to leave the catalog up. I don't intend to modify things. I've said some really boneheaded things over the years, and I've offended people over the years, and I've misinterpreted comments over the years and had to apologize. And it happened. And I don't, personally, am not a big fan of going back and changing that. It, you know, what's out there is out there. that's public record and that's fine. So I don't plan on taking the podcast down. I don't know if Spotify ends up taking down the old Anchor stuff at some point, then I don't know that I'll put it up somewhere else. But as long as Spotify leaves it up there, I'll leave it up there. I'm not going to take it down. I do intend to keep logging. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, and I'll still be around on Discord and the other things. And if you just found the show and you want to reach out, you know, the SpeakPipe account and the Google Voice number will probably work for quite a while. The email will stay live, and the I'll be on Discord. So there'll be ways to reach me if you want to. If you hear this show and, you know, a year from now and you want to reach out, you can. And I'll be happy to respond. So I want to thank everybody. And if you've enjoyed the show and you're looking for something similar for the movies, at least the movie part of it, you can look at the Bedrock Podcast. So Brendan Davis does the Bedrock Podcast. And the Bedrock Podcast, you know, he and some friends talk about all kinds of movies, same kind of genre movies I talk about over here. They also talk about role-playing games because Brendan, of course, is an author. And he has done Wandering Heroes, The Ogre Gate. He also wrote the simpler version of that Osprey published as Righteous Blood and Ruthless Blades. So some really great games over there. They discuss and they talk about a lot of great movies. So if you're looking for a gaming podcast that also talks a lot about genre movies, Bedrock Podcast is a great place to look. And I'll put the link to that in the show notes so you can find it. There are a few more episodes coming up. Like I mentioned during the call-in part, we've got the One Ring discussion coming up next week. And we also have a pretty long episode on the Water film, 1987 film, Extreme Prejudice. That episode's a little over 2 hours. So it'll just be two episodes next week, the Extreme Prejudice episode and the One Ring talk. And then the last week of the month, my good friend Joe Richter from Hindsightless is going to join me to talk about Brewster's Millions. That'll be the final film review of the or film talk. And then on the 30th, I'll put out the final show. So thank you for tuning in. And I hope that kind of explains where I'm coming from. I just think I've kind of done what I need to do in this sphere, and this is a good time to end it. I think we're ending strong. And as the sun sets on the Anchor stuff, I think it's suiting that I go down with the ship. So that's kind of what we're doing here. But I'll be around, and who knows, there may be another show sometime in the future, but I'm not planning that currently, so don't get your hopes up on that. I don't want to sow seeds of false hope, but I hope everybody takes care of themselves, and, let me know how you're doing. You know, like I said, I will respond, even if the show's not live anymore, But I'm talking like it's over, and it's not. There's still 3 more episodes of the show coming out. So let's not get too teary-eyed yet. So I'm going to let you go. Thank you for tuning in. I really appreciate it. And I will talk to you guys again on Sunday when Dark Fluid joins me to discuss Extreme Prejudice. Thank you to TJ for the music. Thank you to Ray Otis for the Coffee Cup clip art. Thank you to all my callers today. Thank you to MW for the call that didn't get played. Thank you to all the listeners. And sorry, my dog barking in the background. Maddie's distracting me a little bit. But everybody, please be excellent to each other.
Your auntie or a joke about your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if I fiddle shoot him dead. Bring on the gore, bring on the gore. I want some more, bring on the gore. Well, your butcher is a dice man and your moil is by the tipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the wood chipper. Don't look away. Zombies are rising and the world has gone to heck. We're living for the dying and we're dying for the train wreck.